safety harness over his shoulders. Kaufman hesitated a heartbeat, then asked, "You know the routine for aiming at a missile?" She nodded. "Point the nose at the rocket exhaust plume. Easy." He nodded back at her. "Yeah, easy. In the simulator." Christopher heard the sarcasm in his tone. She thought about her co-pilot for a couple of moments, then decided to sweeten his life a little. "Can you handle it by yourself for a few minutes?" she asked the major. "Sure." Christopher smiled inwardly. That was every co-pilot's answer whenever he was asked to take the controls. "Sure." They want to fly, not watch the boss do the flying. "Okay," she said, unbuckling her safety harness. "It's all yours." "Right," said Kaufman. The colonel slid out of her chair, took off the heavy flight helmet and left it on the seat, then stepped through the cockpit hatch. Lieutenant Charman was at his station, a stack of charts on his lap, and still another map on his console's main screen. The lieutenant looked up at Christopher. "Rendezvous in 53 minutes," he said. "Fine," said Christopher. She gave Charman a light pat on the shoulder and turned to O'Banion, who was pulling a freshly typed sheet from the printer built into his communications rack. She could see "Top Secret" emblazoned on it in bright red capital letters. O'Banion passed it to her without reading it. From Brad again, she saw. "Major General B.B. Scheib, Deputy Commander, MDA." Skipping past the formalities, she got down to the meat of the message. 1. Refueling tanker experiencing engine troubles, diverted to Misawa AFB for repair. Refueling rendezvous now scheduled for 1100 hours Zulu. Christopher made a swift mental calculation. We've crossed the dateline. 1100 Zulu time is 9 a.m. here. 2. If refueling rendezvous is further delayed, you have the option of canceling rendezvous and diverting to Misawa AFB and awaiting further orders. She stared at the sheet of paper, noticing that it was shaking like a trembling aspen in her hand. "I've got to decide whether we hang out here over the ocean and wait for the tanker to find us, or abort the whole mission and land at Misawa. I've got to decide if we try to stop those damned missiles when they're launched or put down safely in Japan. Brad's left it to me to decide. He's dropped the hot potato in my damned lap." Spokane, Washington, Northwest Regional Electrical Power Headquarters. Carl Dieter Olbricht hated trees. It had not always been so. As a youth, growing up on the windswept prairie of Nebraska, he had loved to climb the lone apple tree on the front lawn of his house. But once he started working for the local electric utility as a rugged, handsome, blonde lineman, he began to acquire a hatred for trees. Not all trees. Only those close enough to electrical power lines to bring the lines down if they were blown over in a storm. If Olbricht could have his way, every tree within 2 miles on either side of a power line would be cut down, carted away, its roots dug up or dynamited. He was standing with his back to the big electronic wall map at the regional headquarters, looking out the windows on the other side of the big command center. Snow was whipping past, and the trees out on the parking lot were swaying as their branches loaded up with ice. The wall map was blank, and had been since the satellites had gone dead. Olbricht had to rely on the already overloaded telephone lines to get some semblance of a picture about the situation over the three-state